let's return to the very dramatic story of the meeting between Laban and Jacob after Jacob left hastily with his whole family at the end of 20 years in Paddan Aram. The story where we're picking it up today is in Genesis chapter 31, verse 36. Now what's happened is Laban caught up with him. God warned Laban the night before, don't you dare do anything negative or even positive against or to Jacob, because God is protecting Jacob. So he's frustrated and angry that Jacob took off so hastily, but he expresses his biggest problem is that Jacob stole his gods, stole his little idols. And Jacob acknowledges, I was afraid, that's why I did take off the way I did, but I didn't take your gods, and if you find somebody with them, they can be executed. And of course, we know, thanks to the writer Moses, that Rachel has them hidden in her little camel saddle that she's sitting on. And when her father is searching through the entire encampment with the permission of Jacob, she excuses her non-rising in her father's presence with the phrase, I'm having the way of women right now. Please excuse me for not rising, which guaranteed that her dad was not going to check the camel saddle because he would not want to be considered ceremonially unclean after having touched anything that she was sitting on. So effectively, he comes away looking like a fool because the stolen items were not found. And Jacob is mad. Verse 36, then Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, what is my offense? What is my sin that you so hotly have pursued me? And that's for sure because he was averaging almost 60 miles a day to catch up with Jacob. For you have felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between the two of us. And of course, there's nothing that he can lay out that doesn't belong to Jacob, because the actual stolen items were not found. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. So now he's going to go back to the 20 years of hard work that he's put in with him and how he's bent over backwards to do good things toward Laban while Laban has done everything he could to cheat him. So he has taken good care of the animals, and thanks to the blessing of God, nothing bad has happened to any of them. And that is in their birthing cycles. And he has not eaten without paying for them any of the meat of these animals. Verse 39, what was torn by wild beasts? I didn't bring that to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. So the deal was, I was responsible for everything. That's the way you made it, Laban. There I was. By day the heat consumed me, the cold by night, my sleep fled from my eyes. It's not easy being a shepherd. There's a lot of hard work involved in it, and Jacob is venting about that right now. Verse 41, for 20 years, these 20 years I've been in your house, I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and that's still a sore point, I'm sure, and 6 years for your flock, and you've changed my wages 10 times. And you remember, he had actually been complaining to Rachel and Leah about that only a few days earlier, right before they left. And then he brings God into the story. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, the fear there is the idea of that awe respect that you show the true and living God. And so it's kind of a new name for God. If he had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. And God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night. And so he doesn't pull any punches about this, does he? He says, if you'd had your way, you would have sent me away with nothing. But God didn't let you get away with that, and he appeared to you to warn you last night to leave me alone. Verse 43. Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, and you can tell from this, he's as mad too. The daughters are my daughters. The children are my children. The flocks are my flocks. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these, my daughters, and for thee, their children whom they have born? So he feels like all of this stuff is mine, but I can't do anything because your God won't let me do it. Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. Now, this is not a good covenant. This is going to be turning out to be a covenant of everybody needs to behave themselves. Everybody needs to stay on their own side of this line that we're drawing here. So Jacob took a stone, and he set it up as a pillar, or a monument. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. And so they took stones, and they made a heap, and then they ate there by the heap. It was customary that you offered sacrifices at such cuttings of covenants, and you ate some of the meat from the sacrifices as the sealing of the deal. And then, sometimes you'd have a marker that would be raised up as a permanent reminder. So they're doing all of this together because they don't trust each other. Verse 47, Laban called it Yegr Sahaduta, which has to do with a heap of a witness. Because remember, they piled up a whole bunch of stones. But Jacob simply called it Galeed, which means heap of witness. So they've got similar names, but slightly different language variations on that same name. Now, the Galeed name that we see here in the text, that is just a slight pronunciation variation on Gilead. And so this is how this region gets its name. And so Laban then says this, this heap is a witness between you and me today. And therefore he named it Galeed. And Mitzpah. Now Mitzpah has the idea of a watchtower. And this is one of those strange twists in how we apply little bitty tiny words and phrases in the Bible to what we like, because we just like the way it sounded. When I was a younger man and my wife was a younger woman, we're talking many decades ago now, we were in high school together, we were dating, and we purchased something referred to as the Mitzpah coin. It was a coin that had a verse that we're about to read here in verse 49, the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. And it sounds like a very cool sentiment for a young couple. And so this coin has that written on it, and the coin was then, it was cut into two pieces, and the two pieces were put on necklace chains, and each of us wore a portion of this necklace. Because it was just such a sweet sentiment. You know, even when we're not together, God's going to be watching over us and taking good care of us as a couple, right? Very cool. A lot of them were sold. I don't know if they're still sold today. But the funny thing is, that's the exact opposite of what the original story intended this phrase to mean. this story is not a sweet story about how these guys don't like being out of each other's sight and they really want God to take good care of them when they're not together. It's basically God has to keep an eye on both of us because I don't trust you and you don't trust me. So verse 49, this idea of the watchtower, this heap of stones becomes God's watchtower where he makes sure that neither side tries to do anything bad to the other side. For he said, he who is, watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. So Laban says, I don't trust you, and you better be swearing today you'll take good care of my daughters and my grandkids, because even if I can't keep an eye on you, God will. And I'm asking him to punish you if you do anything to hurt my girls. And then Laban said to Jacob, see this heap and the pillar, which I've set between you and me. This heap is a witness, the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. So it becomes a border between the two families, the two parts of the same family. No one is allowed to cross this line without permission of the other. That's the guarantee that they're making on this day. And they would have been swearing kind of a blood oath. More than likely, they would have walked the covenant line. Remember, we talked about this, where you take the animals and you split them in half and drag them apart. And there's a bloody path, and both of you walk the bloody path and effectively say, may I be killed and split in half if I violate what we're promising here today. Then Laban brings God into the picture. Verse 53, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor. Now, Nahor is the brother of Abraham and the grandfather of Laban. So you've got Jacob is coming from the Abraham line and Laban is coming from the Nahor line. And so he invokes the same God that both of their grandfathers served at one time. And then he gives this little nugget. It's not found anywhere else in Scripture, just here. And the God of their father. So that would be Terah. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor was also the God of Terah. And he was buried up in Haran. His tomb was probably something that that Laban saw on a regular basis. So he's making an oath in the name of the God that their whole family at one time served. So may this God judge between us or keep an eye on us and avenge any violations of this covenant. And so Jacob swore by the fear of his father Yitzhak. And there's that phrase again. Apparently it was something that Jacob used as a common practice to refer to God as the fear of his father Jacob. So oaths have been exchanged and sacrifices as well. Verse 54, Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country, called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread, spent the night in the hill country. And then early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his grandchildren and his daughters, and he blessed them. And then Laban departed and returned home. And that's the last that we hear of him in this story. He's gone. And so now Jacob can probably slow his progress down because he's not trying to run ahead of Laban anymore because Laban is gone. He's not a threat. So Jacob is now going to turn his attention to the next thing that he's nervous about, and that's his brother Esau, who is a lot closer to him now than where Laban is going back to back up in Mesopotamia. because where they're at in Gilead is roughly a little over 100 miles from Esau's territory. So we're talking about 3 or so days travel, maybe a couple if they're in a hurry. So he is not very far away from his brother. And the last contact he had with his brother 20 years ago was that his brother wanted to kill him. And so if Jacob's going to come back into Canaan and reestablish a relationship with his father and his mother, then of course his estranged brother is going to find out about it. All right, so verse 1 of chapter 32, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. Now, there's no more details than that. Did he see another vision of angels going back and forth on a stairway to heaven? Did he see angels just encamped in some sort of encampment nearby? Did he see angels up in the sky? Did he see angels moving around on the perimeter of his camp? I'd like to know more details, but they're not here. But once he did see these supernatural beings, these servants of God, he gives the place a name. Verse 2, when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." Just like, you know, when he was at Bethel and he saw the stairway into God's presence, he said, "This is God's house." And so he gave it the name Bethel, God's house. So here he says, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim, which means the place of two camps. So he's got his camp in mind and God's camp. Now, Mahanaim ends up being an important city later in the history of Israel. It will become a fortified city on the east side of the Jordan Valley. It will be the place where King David sets up his government in exile whenever his son tries to kill him. And before that, it was the place where Saul's son set up his government in exile after his father was killed in the battle and David is declared king. So, very important place. Strangely enough, we do not know exactly where it's at. Even though it was an important place, archaeologically, I don't believe we've found, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the location of Mahanaim. Verse 3, then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Now, later we'll talk a little bit more about Esau's family. After Jacob had left, Esau moves away from his father and goes south and east of where the southern end of the Dead Sea is, and he ends up becoming part of the community of Seir, and eventually starts taking over the leadership of that community. And that is why it will become the country named after his nickname, which is Edom, or Red. And so that's where he's at. And Jacob somehow knows that and sends messengers down that direction with this instruction. Verse 4, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau." Notice the verbiage. My master Esau. Even though his brother is only a few minutes older than him, because they're twins, he wants to use verbiage to show, "I consider myself subservient to you." "Thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I've sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." So He sends the message out, says, I want to open up a dialogue as I'm coming home. Verse 6, the messengers return to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. So the return messengers, they hurry back and say, boss, your brother's on his way, and he's got 400 guys with him. And that panics Jacob. Because remember, again, the last time he had contact with Esau, Esau planned to kill him. Verse 7. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two camps. And here's another reason why this place is called Mahanaim. Because not only did he see the camp of the angels right next to his camp, but he broke his camp up into two camps. Now, what's his thinking? Verse 8. If Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then that camp that is left will escape. So he figures at least half of my family, half of my people will get away. And then he prays. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Yitzhak, oh, he who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I'm not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you've shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. And this is where I had gotten the idea, which I passed on to you, that when Jacob left, he had nothing but the clothes on his back and the staff in his hand, because his father Yitzhak was upset with him for tricking him, and so he sent him out with nothing. And now he's come back with everything, and he is thankful to God for that, and he is invoking God's protection. Verse 11, please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he is upset, he is fearful, but he is praying with some basic faith. God, you made me a promise that everything would work out, that my descendants would be numerous, that you would bless me. And how's that going to happen if we all get killed? You've got to step in here. And so he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. So now he gives kind of a reparations payment. He figures, I cheated my brother out of the double portion of the inheritance. I've got plenty. What I will do is I will make up for what he lost because of my actions. And I want you to keep in mind that the huge number of things that he sends out here represents to us just how much he must have had. Because if he's giving even 10% of what he has to Esau, then he's got a bunch. Listen to the gift that he sends to Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats. So he gives to Esau a huge breeding herd of goats. 200 ewes and 20 rams. So a huge breeding group of sheep. 30 milking camels and their calves. 40 cows and 10 bulls. 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. And then he handed over to his servants, every drove by itself, and said to the servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. So he's going to stretch this drift out over many miles, it sounds like, so that the first group will meet Esau, and then the next group will meet Esau later, and then the next group after that will meet Esau later. So it's gift after gift after gift after gift, because here's the instructions. He instructed the first, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau, and moreover, he is behind us. And he likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. And this is what he thought. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterward I shall see his face, and perhaps he will accept me. So he is trying to make amends. And you've got to applaud him for this. He had done his brother wrong. Doesn't matter that his brother had already sold the birthright and was going back on that, apparently, by making the arrangements with his dad to have the blessing put upon him. Jacob tricked him. Jacob tricked Yitzhak and took that, which he should not have taken in that fashion. So he is trying to make it right. He is trying to get back into right relationship with his brother. And that is what we should do. When we have done someone wrong, we should, in the process of trying to fix the relationship, make amends. Make the situation right. Well, we've run out of time for our story today, so we'll have to leave the rest of it until tomorrow, when we get back into God's inspired word.